We're going to get to your Elimination Chamber review in just a minute, and including Shayna Baszler winning, which we all saw coming, the dead Philly crowd, the Street Profits retaining, Undertaker's appearance, choke-slamming AJ Styles, and a whole bunch more. I mean, we're going to dive right into it as we are now full steam ahead with no more distractions, no more detours, straight ahead to WrestleMania in, what, 26 days? So the Elimination Chamber was really nothing more than a maintenance show for WrestleMania. So we're going to get to all of the matches, my thoughts and reactions, right after a word from our sponsors.
Do you find yourself binging TV shows and quoting movies? Well, look no further than the We Like to Say We're Experts podcast. Join Evan and Nicole, a husband and wife team, on Thursdays as they review movies and TV shows, as well as brighten your day with funny news stories.
Pick Avatar, not The Last Airbender Avatar, just Avatar, the 2009 James Cameron movie, excuse me. I didn't like it. You know, I saw this in theaters. I had heard all about the special effects. I think the special effects were okay. Now, personally, I don't feel like they were groundbreaking. I don't know if this is a case of too much hype, but, you know, the story is easily one of the most forgettable I've ever seen because it's just Pocahontas in space.
Even as far as, like, season one, I forget what episode it was, but she basically tells her brother, like, the next time you raise a hand to me, like, I basically will do something to you. Yeah. And then Khal Drogo burns
the golden crown,
and she's basically like not happy, but she kind of like has a smirk on her face.
She's satisfied.
Yeah.
Military base to tell Dr. Manhattan, who's basically God, that somebody's gonna try to kill him. You know, it's just like, okay. And then Dr. Manhattan's like, yeah, I know. You know what I mean?
He's like, I know everything.
He's like, I can see my own, like, you know, he's like, I can see my own timeline, past and future, for the most part.
Yeah.
It's like it's a little fuzzy in the future, he says, but, like, he knows. Like, he's, and he can do whatever he wants, which is the other best part. Like, he
and
can,
he also doesn't wear any clothes, which is weird. Well, not weird, but, like,
he transcended pants. I tried explaining that last night.
Listen to We Like to Say We're Experts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcast platform of your choice. If you like the show, follow us on Instagram at Experts Podcast to see what will be reviewed next and interact with the hosts.
So if you're still thinking about getting that website going, then you need to check out keyumi.com. That's keyumie.com. So what does Kiyumi offer? Well, of course, they've got 24/7 monitoring, automatic backups, virus scanning, 24/7 support, and they use solid state drives for faster service. So it's better than what those big hosting companies use that just have slow standard hard drives. And their website is just flat out easier to use than those big name companies. And if you have that great name for a website and you're wondering if it's available, well, you can check if it's available immediately going to keyumi.com. Again, that's keyumie.com. Go there. You can also get an early bird special, 50% off, using the code EARLYBIRD. Again, use the code EARLYBIRD and you get 50% off. So guys, don't wait. If you've been thinking about developing that website, just save yourself some time and money and go to keyumi.com, keyumie.com, and use the code EARLYBIRD to get 50% off.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Because Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast as we get closer and closer to WrestleMania. And we're all about the Elimination Chamber today from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I have to say, that was probably the least interested that I've ever heard a crowd at a pay-per-view event. And I don't know if it's because the Saudi Arabia show just pretty much took the thunder away and gave the big matches when Elimination Chamber could have been that big, or if WWE was just essentially putting out a pay-per-view that was nothing more than a maintenance show for WrestleMania, kind of keeping things as is, nothing revolutionary happening, kind of your run-of-the-mill glorified SmackDown or Raw that many people used as an analogy for this show, but certainly the Philadelphia crowd, a very tough crowd anyway, certainly let WWE know that they were not interested in the product that they were selling last night. And obviously Monday Night Raw, as we speak, by the way, is being aired on USA. So I have no idea what's happened on Raw. I will know tomorrow because I watch Raw on delay. So those of you that tweet at me between now and tomorrow morning, I really try to avoid. And the reason is because I don't want spoilers. I try to enjoy it as much as I can, even though this is kind of my secondary job that I have, although I love it. I try to avoid it because I want that part of my life to exist where it's enjoyable to watch wrestling and I don't see the predictions or the spoilers. So just a heads up, though, I have not seen Raw. I know that Edge is returning. I'm sure that he won't get his hands on Randy Orton, but I love it. So I'm, you know, as we are now truly fully into the WrestleMania drive, the final pitch home here in the last 4 weeks until WrestleMania, and things are going to heat up in a big way. Obviously, Edge returns tonight, and you already know what happened if you're listening to the show, I'm sure. I don't, again, but and of course, we have Stone Cold returning next Monday night in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on 316 night. So I have theories on what he could be doing. One of them being a special referee in the Kevin Owens-Seth Rollins match, presumed match. I'm sure tonight we'll get a lot more official announcements on matches at WrestleMania, and those that one I would assume is all but a lock. And Stone Cold would be a hell of a guest referee in that scenario. Not just because, hey, he's great to watch as a guest referee, but hey, I think also Kevin Owens and him have a lot in common. Not just the stunner, but their personalities. There's some parallels there. You could say, argue, well, it would take the focus off of Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins. Well, we've seen them, you know, fight for the last few months now, so I don't think it would be that big of a deal to take a little bit of the focus off of those two and just wonder what Austin's going to do. Again, I'm two steps ahead of myself because this match isn't even official, and we have no idea what Austin's going to do next week, but those are my thoughts on what he could do. I just hope we see some stunners and some beer, and we get some kind of announcement of his participation in subcapacity at WrestleMania 36. So, anyway, let's get to the Elimination Chamber, which is and was to me initially a very underwhelming card, as it was to many. And we looked at this card and said, wow, where are the stars, right? Very star-light. And yes, you had, of course, Kevin Owens make an appearance. You had The Undertaker make an appearance, probably the biggest pop of the night with The Undertaker making his presence known, and we'll get to that match too. And it just was very light on the star power. And that was certainly voiced, or really lack of voiced, by the Philly crowd, who used their silence to do the talking, ironically. I understand, too, why the Philly crowd did it, because they didn't have a whole lot to cheer for. And they're not a sympathetic crowd where they'll cheer for a match because they feel bad that they're not actually, that they're not reacting. Because that's what the whole purpose of a match is to entertain crowds. And if the fans don't make a reaction or don't make noise, then WWE deems it, you know, that the fans aren't interested. But the Philly crowd is notoriously difficult to please, just like any New York crowd, New Jersey crowd, even LA to some extent. Big cities, big markets, big NFL cities are notoriously difficult to please. And the old saying goes, if you can get over in Madison Square Garden, you can get over anywhere. I think you could also apply that logic to Philadelphia, who are just really, really hard fans to please. And, you know, having a card of this, you know, this magnitude and this light in star power certainly didn't help matters, and which is why you saw them react to The Undertaker the way that they did. So you add all that up together, and it was a very quiet crowd other than the beginning of the show. And I'll start there, and then my next analysis will be the Shayna Baszler win, because I want to talk about that up front too. But Daniel Bryan started off the night with Drew Gulak, a name that doesn't really excite people off the bat. You hear that name and you think, oh, is it an episode of 205 Live? Right? Like, or you say, who? Which is one of those two reactions, typically. For a casual fan that is not following closely the career of Drew Gulak, which isn't even, not a great name to begin with. And I'm sure, actually, I'm not sure. If I was Drew Gulak, I would be concerned that my first name's going to get chopped, right? I would say that my name is on the chopping block next, and I'm just going to be known as Gulak. Why? Well, because we have a Drew also in the company in Drew McIntyre. So be careful, Drew Gulak. You could be next up on the casualty list of first names. I mean, that's what happened too with Bobby Roode and Bobby Lashley. What happened? Robert Roode happened. Bobby Roode got taken and morphed into Robert Roode. This has happened before. So certainly Drew Gulak, though, opened some eyes last night. The match was very good, very good. I even tweeted this out that I'm looking forward to the next time that these two lock up. And maybe it is WrestleMania. Maybe that's what is in store for Daniel Bryan. I mean, I wouldn't say that that is the most overwhelming thing Daniel Bryan has done at WrestleMania. I mean, not even by a long shot. But if you're looking for a solid, very high-quality match and giving these guys 20 minutes to put on a show, certainly that you could make a case. And Drew Gulak certainly made his case last night, having the match of his career in a loss. I mean, that was easily Drew Gulak's biggest match of his career last night, and I would say that he hit a triple, if you're using a baseball analogy. Although maybe since it's March Madness season, I should have used the analogy of he hit a three-point shot. He really, I think, hit it home and made a case for himself and put his name on the map and got eyeballs on him for people that otherwise wouldn't have. And maybe they wrap this thing up at SmackDown and Daniel Bryan moves on to a bigger name. One that's floating around is Sheamus. That certainly could be the case as well. But I like this match a lot. Even the audience, the crowd in Philly, the tough crowd, seemed to be into it. I think a part of that also had to be because it's the first match of the night. The crowd is at their maximum potential energy. And you had Daniel Bryan, a beloved star there. A lot of history with the Philly crowd, and it was just the right match to start off with. I thought they were going to start with the first chamber match with the tag team championship, and they didn't. And I'm glad they didn't, because Daniel Bryan was the right candidate to have an opening match in that environment and to get the crowd going, and WWE knows it. So maybe there's something bigger for Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania, and that of Sheamus. Certainly there's history there to pull on as well, and maybe they will. But if it is a Drew Gulak, Daniel Bryan WrestleMania match, this sounds insane, but I'd be okay with it. Because I think that we have come to realize, as Daniel Bryan fans, that WWE at the current time is not using Daniel Bryan as a central figure, a central storyline. They are not going to be having him chase a top championship in the near future. And we have come to terms with where he's at, which ironically also creates, I think, more support for him, because that's what created support for him in the first place. Was the perception of WWE misbooking him and the organic connection he has with the fans and the fans supporting him despite the booking and sending a message to WWE creative of where they think he should be. So maybe in a backwards way, this is the best thing that Daniel Bryan could be doing, is undercard stuff, raising new stars, having great matches with them, getting eyeballs on new guys, still having great matches, and then occasionally dipping his toe back into the championship picture. I mean, I'm really not going to complain. I know there are many people out there, myself included, that was annoyed that one of your biggest stars in the company, biggest baby faces in the company, wasn't doing jack and had no direction. He was like a lost soul wandering in a desert with nowhere to go, and we don't know what direction he's headed. And Drew Gulak may be the best thing that happened to Daniel Bryan, and obviously Daniel Bryan is certainly the best thing that ever happened to Drew Gulak. So I may be blowing this completely out of proportion, and they may not do anything with this as a follow-up. But if they do, I really would urge fans to just take a second and realize that Daniel Bryan is helping build new stars, and that he can still have a great match, and that he will be back in the title picture and the title hunt sometime in 2020. And if it's not at WrestleMania, I'm okay with that. So I know that some fans don't feel that way, but at least that's how I do. So anyway, well, before I get to the Shayna Baszler win, that was one of the shocking moments of the night. I'm saying that extremely sarcastically. I just want to invite you guys to check out my ad-free blog or our ad-free feed at patreon.com/WWE podcast. If you just are, I don't need the ads, or I actually have somebody, I don't remember where I saw it. I don't know if it was email or if it was DM. I can't remember. Somebody said that they use my podcast to go to sleep and that the ads disrupt them. So whoever you are, I apologize. It might've been an Apple podcast review. I think it might have been. I can't remember. But whoever you are, I apologize. And I'm glad that my voice helps you sleep, right? I'm not ASMR. Isn't that what they call it? Like ASMR? I don't even know what ASMR stands for, but I didn't really tag myself as that. If you don't know what that is, look it up. No, it's not dirty or anything, I promise. But I apologize for the ads. And if you want to be able to sleep soundly with no interruptions, you go to patreon.com/WWE podcast. And for $1 a month, you get every single episode of this show that has ever been done ad-free. How about that for a deal? For $1, right? Not bad. But also, my podcast is on the free feed anywhere that podcasts are available. And you can head on over to the website at wwepodcast.com. And everything is available there. I'm trying to expand the functionality of that as well. I will continue to say that I have very little time in my life to dedicate to any more of content creation. I think I'm at my max, and that's why I may be bringing on more people. And that's why I'm so grateful for the team I have, because they are a big reason why this show is so successful and will continue to be. But as far as content creation, man, I am being stretched super thin, but I am not going. That's not saying I'm not doing it. It just says I may not do it, but I will find someone or some way to get it done and add video and everything else, especially to the website. All right. Well, let's get on to the big topic at hand. The big topic at hand was the image that we all had as Elimination Chamber went off the air. And I was half asleep. I was laying in bed with my laptop, headphones in, and I was watching the chamber. And we finally get to the main event and the entrances and all the pop and circumstance. And we had Shayna Baszler come out number four. Obviously, I'm split on how I felt about it. I think the lack of crowd reaction didn't help. Anytime there's a loud reaction to a match, it instantly makes it, you know, five times better. Even if it, on the surface, if you listen to it in silent mode, it wouldn't be as good. But the perception of a loud match is always and usually a more positive one versus that of a maybe better quality match, but less in terms of a crowd reaction. It's there's some kind of like human study that needs to be done on that. But the whole premise of this, the whole purpose of this match was to get over Shayna Baszler. I don't think that it was a soul in this world that believed there was anybody else that was going to be able to win that match. My prediction was that it was going to come down to Natalya and Shayna Baszler, and that Natalya was going to be able to have a Kofi Kingston-like hope spot moment that happened last year against Daniel Bryan. And that didn't happen at all. Shayna Baszler came out, eliminated every single woman. She eliminated Liv Morgan. She eliminated Ruby Riott and Sarah Logan in very quick fashion. Some of the bumps looked brutal. The build-up to Asuka and her was entertaining. And I have to say this about Asuka. She is a walking cartoon. And I don't know if that's a compliment. I really don't. And I don't know if that's a slight either. She is just the most animated, awkward, but I can't stop watching character in the women's division that I've ever seen. She's awkward to listen to, uncomfortable to listen to. Like, sometimes I feel embarrassed for her, but then other times I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. You know, when she says easy peasy, that's starting to grow on me, because it's something that is obviously one of the very few things I understand her saying. It was kind of akin to Shinsuke Nakamura two years ago saying, you know, no speak of English. I loved that. I loved that. And this is kind of Asuka's version of that, where she says easy peasy, and all of her animations and yelling and weird faces that she does inside the pod, and just what she does on a weekly basis. I mean, this is just what she does in promos or just standing backstage. She's just the most animated. It's as if she's, you know, went to an acting class and they were showing people how to overact. Here's how you overact. And she, you know, was taught that, well, you have to emote and you have to be larger than life. And she just feels like a walking cartoon character. And again, I don't know if that's a compliment, and I don't know if it's a rip on her. You decide, because I don't know. Sometimes I feel one way, sometimes I feel the other. But back to the match with Shayna. She ran through Natty faster than I thought. Some of the bumps were, again, brutal. Her slamming, who was it, Liv Morgan against the plexiglass that Eric Bischoff once touted as bulletproof. LMAO, right? I thought some of the, again, spots were brutal. But this was all about Shayna Baszler. It's her, you know, getting over her finish, how quickly the people tapped out, how the women tapped out, particularly Sarah Logan just all of a sudden passing out, right? It looked like she just died in Shayna Baszler's arms after she tapped out. It was pretty funny. I actually laughed at that. I mean, somebody tweeted at me too, you know, when I said, how the hell is Sarah Logan have a spot in this match, but Kairi Sane doesn't? I mean, you think about it. Has Sarah Logan ever even won a match? Ever. I don't think so. Maybe, you know, maybe a few house shows or when we were first introduced as the Riot Squad, but since she's broken off, can anybody tell me if Sarah Logan has actually won a match and yet she's over Kairi Sane? I don't know. I'm very befuddled by this. Didn't Kairi Sane actually end up pinning Becky Lynch in a match on Raw a few months ago when they were like double teaming Becky Lynch and her and Asuka? I don't know. I think maybe I'm making that up, but my point is it just made no sense. Kairi Sane is just, to me, the real loser of this match was Kairi Sane, because all of the other women, and this is the positive side of this, After Shayna Baszler ran through everyone, including Asuka, who didn't even put up as long of a fight as I hoped she would. It was like a couple minutes. I thought they were going to go 10 minutes. And then, you know, it looks like Asuka could get somewhere, be able to do something against Shayna, have some good hope spots. And there really wasn't anything big. It was just, you know, Asuka passing out and Shayna saying, you know, I did what I said I was going to do. And the Philly crowd just kind of booing, whether they were booing because it was Shayna Baszler as a heel and doing a good job, or they were just booing at the main event of this show. Probably a little of both. I don't know, but you know, Kairi Sane is the real victim here of this match. And so here's the positive I was going to get to, and that is that when you look at who is in this match, is there anyone in this match that Shayna Baszler rolled over and steamrolled that can't rebound from it? No, the answer is no. Liv Morgan, Sarah Logan, Ruby Riott, all three got absolutely steamrolled. And you know what? They'll be just fine. They will be just fine because they were going nowhere anyway. Liv Morgan and her feud with Lana just stopped. I mean, I guess Lana's shooting a movie or something. I don't know. But Liv, you know, Liv had beaten Lana a couple of times. And then, you know, Ruby Riott and Sarah Logan. So Ruby Riott turned heel, and I guess Sarah Logan, with all of her screaming, which is what somebody tweeted me, and that was something I was going to say a few minutes ago, and I lost my train of thought. Somebody tweeted at me that the reason that Sarah Logan was in the match and Kairi Sane wasn't was because of her scream, or something like that. I found that funny. I mean, her scream is, it's nothing to behold, I will say that. And Sarah Logan, easily is at the bottom of the food chain in this match. She feels like a half-baked superstar, right? She feels like she's kind of not all there. And I don't mean that from a mental perspective, like, oh, something's wrong with her. No, I mean as if she's kind of halfway to a gimmick that hasn't been fully fleshed out yet. It's as if she just went, try to do something different, but just finished halfway and said, okay, we're done, right? She's got this, she had a little bit of paint on her nose. She has the dreads. She wears kind of outdoorsy stuff. I don't know what to think of her. I don't know what she is. I mean, outside of her scream that she added, I mean, is that like a Xena the Warrior Princess scream? Like, what is that? I don't know. I'm only being critical of it because this character is so undefined that I feel uncomfortable watching her because she looks uncomfortable, right? When somebody doesn't have confidence and you're talking to somebody and you have a friend or a loved one or a significant other and they're not confident in themselves, can't you just sense it? As human beings, we just sense that. It's just innately built into our psyche. We can sense when somebody is not confident, which is why confidence is so attractive. Universally, confidence is attractive, whether you're trying to attract, a boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, or just attract an employer on a job interview. One of the top things that people look for? Confidence. Even innately, if it's not transparently said, it's looked for subconsciously. So when we see this in a wrestling event like Sarah Logan, she just exudes insecurity, and rightfully so, because I'd be a little bit insecure too if the crowd, not one person made a single sound during her entrance, and that she doesn't feel like I don't think that she feels 100% invested in her character, because I don't think she knows what the hell she is, right? She's this outdoorsy woman who, like, what, she grew up in the woods? She was raised by wolves? Like, what is this? I mean, if that's your backstory, you got to give me more than that or just pretend it didn't happen. Like Katie Vick the thing, right? Katie Vick the whole thing, and let's just pretend it didn't happen. Have her come back in like 2 months, repackaged, and just try this over. Hit the reset button, please, because it's uncomfortable. Okay, that's enough on Sarah Logan. Ruby Riott, I'm a fan of. She's got something there. She feels like she's kind of moving in a direction. She looks a little different from when she left. And then you have Liv Morgan, who obviously is kind of in the same boat. She's moving somewhere. I don't know where it is. She looks more confident. No more pink tongue. She's not a follower anymore. She's out on her own. She gets steamrolled too. Fine. Can any of those three not survive that? The answer is no. None of them are going anywhere anyway. And then you could say the same thing for Natalya. Believe it or not, you could say the same thing for Natalya. Why? What relevant program is Natalya in? None is the answer. She's the grizzled vet that is respected backstage, that is the gatekeeper of the women's division. That's it. And that's, again, that's not dissing Natalya. It's okay that everyone's not on top. That's how the pecking order in sports and life works. And today people outcry for, oh, you got to have equal opportunity and equal outcome. I've said this before on this show. But it lends itself and rears its head even in pro wrestling fantasy land. You can't have both. You can't have equal opportunities and equal outcome. Think about how that's not possible. Think about it. It is never going to happen that you give everyone an equal opportunity and you get equal outcome out of it. Conversely, you can't manipulate equal outcome and also concurrently have equal opportunity. You can't do it because you're manipulating the outcome, which makes it not equal opportunity. So my point is, and by the way, that goes for a lot of politics. There's a little bit of my insight into politics, a very, very small view. I don't ever know if I want to start a political podcast because, number one, I'm not as knowledgeable as a lot of people are, so I'd get like creamed, but I have very strong feelings on things that are probably not of the popular belief, at least in today's identity politics. So I'll leave that be. But in the world of pro wrestling, again, It's okay that in the men's or women's divisions, that not everyone is on the same field. There needs to be a hierarchy. There needs to be a power ranking. There needs to be a list of, hey, here's the team with the best record. Here's the team with the worst record. Every single sport in the history of the world counts wins and losses. And yes, pro wrestling doesn't do it unless you're AEW, which some, even they sometimes don't follow exactly the record of who should get what. But in pro wrestling, when you look at how fans perceive certain wrestlers, stars, there are ones that are below others, and that's fine. That's okay. So my point with Natalya is, it's okay that she is not in the top spot and probably never will be again in terms of carrying the women's division as a woman champion. And that's fine. And then you have Asuka. And you know what? After losing to Becky Lynch clean twice, and especially the second time losing handily, decisively, I think that was a big clue as to where they're defining Asuka right now. And for her to lose to Shayna Baszler in the way that she did, I think was okay. The only thing I would have done was extend maybe her run with Shayna at the end, instead of having it be probably 5 minutes too soon, at least in my estimation. But the way that she's been treated lately, I think she's going to be defined into a women's tag team match. A woman's tag team championship match, I should say. Remember those things? Remember those tag team championships that the women won at WrestleMania? Bayley and Sasha last year, and then lost it to the Iconics. And then there was another team in there, and I can't remember who. But then it got sent to the Kabuki Warriors, which actually did a whole lot for the belts, and then they're forgotten again. Well, Alexa Bliss alluded to on SmackDown this past week, hey, you guys want to defend those belts, we're over here. Big hint. I'm fine with Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross winning those off the Kabuki Warriors and making them actually something. For God's sakes. Please. Alexa Bliss is a wasted talent doing her silly moment of bliss things. And as great as Alexa is, I don't think that's where she belongs personally. It's uncomfortable with kind of the morning chatter that they do that's not endearing. Inside jokes, I don't like Nikki Cross playing little sister to her. But anyway, that's another side conversation rant. So we have Shayna Baszler win, and all of these women will recover just fine. They will recover just fine and all continue on their careers without a hitch or a hiccup. They will. I promise you. And it's all in the name of Shayna Baszler winning that match to prepare herself for Becky Lynch, to prepare herself for the perception to fans that she could be the one to dethrone Becky Lynch, and she very well may be. I wouldn't bank on it, with some potential screwy finishes at the end of that match with maybe Ronda Rousey, or maybe Becky Lynch turns heel and does something underhanded to keep the belt, which are really the only two options outside of Shayna winning. So really you have three options in that match. Shayna beats Becky clean. Actually four options. I'm sorry. It's getting late. Shayna wins clean. Shayna beats Becky with some kind of shenanigans. Ronda Rousey gets involved on somebody's behalf. Or Becky Lynch does something underhanded and wins clean in that match. So actually a lot of possibilities. I went from 3 to 5, but there are a lot of ways you could go in that match, and I'm excited to see it. I hope they do another sit down with these two. I'm ready for this program to begin, and I'm going to be watching particularly closely to Becky Lynch and how she portrays and talks about herself. If she's wearing the Thug Life sunglasses that she's been so fond of over the last few weeks, or maybe an Elton John pair of sunglasses, I don't know. But Becky's promos and how she carries herself are honestly what I'm concerned about the most if you're looking at a babyface continuation with the belt, which I think fans are starting to run a little bit thin in terms of their patience with her belt. Maybe that's the idea. All right. Well, I'm going to take a quick break, and then we still got five more matches to dissect, so I'll run through those, and I promise it won't be five, you know, a 20-minute conversation for every one of the matches remaining. I will try to wrap this up at a reasonable time. I don't want to keep you guys waiting. But first, another word from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
You're listening to the WWE Podcast. We'll be right back after this short break.
So if you're still thinking about getting that website going, then you need to check out Kiyumi.com. That's K-E-Y-U-M-I-E.com. So what does Kiyumi offer? Well, of course, they've got 24/7 monitoring, automatic backups, virus scanning, 24/7 support, and they use solid-state drives for faster service. So it's better than what those big hosting companies use that just have slow, standard hard drives. And their website is just flat-out easier to use than those big-name companies. And if you have that great name for a website and you're wondering if it's available, well, you can check if it's available immediately going to kiyumi.com. Again, that's K-E-Y-U-M-I-E.com. Go there. You can also get an early bird special, 50% off, using the code EARLYBIRD. Again, use the code EARLYBIRD and you get 50% off. So guys, don't wait. If you've been thinking about developing that website, just save yourself some time and money and go to kiyumi.com, K-E-Y-U-M-I-E.com, and use the code EARLYBIRD to get 50% off.
Welcome back to the WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
Alrighty, guys. So, let's get to the pre-show match. Yeah, I'm going to talk about that too. The Viking Raiders defeated Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder. I mean, what can I say about this? I would hope they did, right? I would hope that they actually defeated them, because I don't know the last time Hawkins and Ryder won a match. And they are, again, in the pecking order of WWE perceptions of fans and how they're defined, these guys are pretty much at the bottom of the food tank, or food chain, rather. And so with the Viking Raiders former champions, you expect the Viking Raiders to win. And that was the right call. The match quality was okay. I mean, I don't know what to say about it. But the Viking Raiders are the one, right ones to win. It was just kind of a routine match that you would see at any house show. I mean, that really just what it was. I don't know what more to say about it. The Andrade versus Humberto Carrillo match for the United States Championship, one of the bright lights of the night, really just amazing. Obviously, with Zelina Vega involved, she makes anything better. I'm surprised we didn't get an Angel Garza interference of any kind. I expected to see him in some capacity, and we didn't. And I'm okay with that, because I still believe that they're going to get him into this United States title picture somehow, some way, and get a three-way, maybe with Rey Mysterio making a four-way for the United States Championship at WrestleMania, and that has the potential to really just blow the roof off the building with these four men that just continue to gel extremely well. And with Andrade getting the cheap win by grabbing Carrillo's tights was brilliant. Great decision. You got to have Andrade keep the belt here, although I was a bit nervous that Humberto was going to win it. I don't think it's time for him yet. I think maybe they'll wait until WrestleMania to crown him or Angel Garza United States champion. It's going to be one of those two. Rey Mysterio, if involved, doesn't need it. Okay, SmackDown Tag Team Championship. This was a weird match. I felt a little bit conflicted about this because there's a couple of storylines going on here. You obviously have the United States or the Tag Team Championship, which is first and foremost, but the Mandy Rose storyline and the tension between Otis and Ziggler continues to build. And that was played up a lot during this match. We had, Lince Dorado do the moonsault off the top of the top of the cage, like some kind of Cirque du Soleil performer. It was crazy, although it was kind of weird watching him set up for it, because every guy in the ring was just huddled together looking up instead of fighting one another. But nonetheless, it was still a good spot. I've never seen that before in the chamber. This was, 26th and 27th chamber matches? So, the chamber is becoming less and less special as we speak. But it was a huge move. Having Otis try to corner Dolph Ziggler. He got a couple of shots in. Not as much as you would like. Obviously, if you're a Otis fan, you want to see him destroy Dolph Ziggler. And we didn't get that. We didn't get that. And I'm okay because I think that payoff is coming at WrestleMania, which I think could result in a one-on-one match with these two. Or a tag team match between him and Ziggler. Bobby Roode, Robert Roode, and Ziggler and Otis and Tucker in some kind of just grudge match. And I don't know, but or maybe you could have just some kind of massive multi-team ladder match for the tag team titles. I mean, that's a very, very solid possibility as well. Otis did look kind of foolish for not taking advantage some of the times he had had Dolph Ziggler in his grasp and just kind of shaking his belly for Vince McMahon's amusement backstage instead of actually, you know, trying to exact some revenge on Dolph. But I think this is the most interesting thing Dolph has done in a while. So believe it or not, I think that while it's benefiting Otis, who's the newer guy here to the landscape, it certainly is benefiting Ziggler too for keeping him relevant, number one. And you know, number two, doing something different with Ziggler outside of the screaming promos that he did with Kofi Kingston when he was chasing the WWE title last year. So good for both guys here. Good chemistry. It's a good storyline because it's the age old story. I mean, you see it in high school. I think I brought this up last week. The jock gets the girl while the guy who is the sweet, maybe not as good looking guy who wants the girl is just friends with her. How many times have you seen that? Right? I have been in that situation. I'm not going to tell you what role. I'll let you figure it out. But again, maybe that's a topic for my personal life podcast. Maybe I'm serious. I'm really thinking about doing that because there's just so much that I try to not bore you with. And if it's something you're interested in, I've just, God. I also have to be careful, right? Because if I start revealing things on this show, I know there are probably people that know me on a personal level that listen to this show. And I have to be very careful, right? Because I don't want to cause drama for myself about talking about my personal life that involves people that I know and that know me. So maybe I'll just change the names to hide their identity, right? Maybe that's what I'll do. But anyway, let's move on here to the rest of this match. As Otis, every time you think he's going to get his hands on Ziggler and just, you know, throw him through the glass plate, he doesn't. And he ends up throwing himself out, you know, basically doing a tackle through the cage or through the chamber to the outside, effectively removing himself from the match. And then Tucker gets eliminated shortly thereafter. Heavy machinery's out. And then about a minute later, Ziggler and Roode end up getting themselves eliminated as well. So this program is clearly going to continue, and I'm looking forward to it because it's an easy-to-follow story. I've said that before. I really, really am. In the end, Miz and Morrison end up winning after Morrison hung himself on the top rope to retain the titles against the Usos, who were the final team remaining in the chamber with Miz and Morrison. So I believe I did pick right. I didn't feel I picked right, but I did with Miz and Morrison retaining. And I think it's still the right choice. I really do. Okay. Aleister Black defeating AJ Styles via pinfall. This was a decent match. It felt like it was underwhelming from the perspective of, if you look at AJ Styles and you look at Aleister Black, you'd think this would be a knockout and knock it out of the park type of match. And it's not. It wasn't. I don't know if it's because these two haven't had a whole lot of live time against one another. Maybe that's a part of it, trying to feel each other out and you know, understand each other's timing, their own move sets, and so forth. It could very well be part of that. Also, AJ Styles is not exactly a spring chicken anymore. So I think he reserves the best of the best, and his bump count is starting to get up there, and the wear and tear and all that on his body. I think he's very selective of when he wants to push it into that fifth gear. And I don't think he thought Elimination Chamber may have been the place and time to do that. So I think Aleister Black, AJ Styles is a program in which we will see down the line. And when AJ's ready to kick it into that fifth gear with Aleister, it could be something to behold. But last night was just average with these two. And that's not a diss, because it was a good match. Just wasn't, I guess the expectation was unfairly high. At least that's how I thought of it. Undertaker ends up coming in the ring after AJ Styles was going to go for a tombstone. I thought that was going to be the finish. After AJ Styles went for the tombstone and it was reversed, I said, oh, that would have been awesome, right? Having AJ come out, win with the tombstone, and do the tongue out, and then maybe have the lights go off after there, or maybe have him come out on Monday night and brag and Undertaker's gong hits. But no, AJ Styles gets that move reversed, and then obviously the Undertaker, the gong comes on, and after Gallows and Anderson interfered and started doing a 3-on-1 assault on Aleister Black, Taker comes out and choke slams AJ Styles, and then Black hits Black Mass for the win. And again, this was the biggest pop of the night when in terms of crowd reaction. I enjoyed it. And seeing Taker anytime is something to behold. I have kind of gone by the wayside of complaining that when Undertaker shows up, of, oh, he's washed up, he's done, he's not as good as he was. Sadly, all of that's true. By the same token, Undertaker's a damn living legend. He's a walking legend. And yes, he probably should have retired 6 years ago. But the man is still out there trying to make a living for his family and really milk as much as his body will let him out of his career to stock up money for his family. Because once you're done in wrestling, right, you're done with wrestling. Yes, he can make money off of a podcast or appearances or whatever. But the 6-7 figure salary, the seven figure salary that Undertaker's making is not going to last forever. So I respect the man that's trying to do what he's doing. So we may not see Undertaker retire until next year. I still think Bray Wyatt's going to be the one to retire him. But that's another topic for another day. So, having Aleister Black win here was, I think, the right choice if you're going to have Undertaker interfere on his behalf. I'm very still perplexed as to why Undertaker continues to invoke himself into AJ Styles' story just because AJ, used a tombstone or attempted to use a tombstone. I guess I don't understand Undertaker's anger so much. Maybe we'll get an explanation of that. And furthermore, with Undertaker handily, easily defeating AJ Styles at Super Showdown with a single chokeslam was a really just very concerning over the booking of AJ Styles, and that he can't even kick out of a simple chokeslam. I'm not a fan of the setup of this match. I think that the setup of this match is what's making it feel extremely underwhelming, because it just looks as if Undertaker could steamroll him at any time. And I think Aleister Black versus Undertaker would have been a better way to go. You could still have Aleister Black interject himself in a three-way, or you could do Aleister Black and Undertaker versus AJ Styles in the OC. I mean, you could have the 3-on-2 handicap match at WrestleMania and have Black, have a moment with the Undertaker, or I don't know. There's a lot you could do there. I still think it's going to be 1-on-1, but I guess I'm just very disappointed in how I feel about AJ Styles versus The Undertaker at WrestleMania because of what they've done so far with it. Raw Tag Team Championship, Seth Rollins and Murphy end up losing to the Street Profits, who retain. This was an okay match. Again, I wasn't overwhelmed by this. I still love the athleticism of Montez Ford, who just continues to be the star of the show here. He continues to show his athleticism, show just how high he can jump. He loves to show the go-go gadget legs that he has. I mean, it's really what he has. It's crazy. At times, he almost over-rotated, and so he's got to be careful of that. But overall, Montez Ford is going to be a star. I don't know about Angelo Dawkins. He doesn't seem to have it as much. Angelo Dawkins just seems, at least this is how he's portrayed, I'm not saying this is how he is in person, in real life as a man, but he comes off kind of like a big goof, right? And not in a way that's charming, in a way that's kind of like, obnoxious, and Montez Ford's kind of like the cool, slick-talking, charismatic one, and it's clear that Montez Ford's just kind of riding the coattails. He's kind of like, oh, yeah, what he said. You know, and he's the muscle of the group, so I understand the dynamic of he's the big guy and Montez Ford's the small guy, and I understand the whole psychology that goes behind that of Montez Ford usually getting the hot tag and so forth. I get it. Montez Ford just kind of seems he's clearly the second wheel in this two-wheel team, and that's okay because, you know what, every tag team, almost every single tag team in the history of wrestling has always had somebody is a bigger star in that team, and that's just the way it is. And clearly Montez Ford is, as I said, you know, Angelo Dawkins kind of comes off as a goof sometimes. He's just like this big goof that he's hanging around with. Okay, so this was an okay match, though. I did expect to see Kevin Owens, and we saw him with a bag of popcorn. I'm sure you know, Vince is like, God, Kevin, why don't you come out there and you have some popcorn? You're having a good time. And, you know, I could just see it because of Kevin Owens not exactly having the biggest, best physique. You wouldn't have had this had it been like, John Morrison interfering in a match. He certainly wouldn't have, Vince wouldn't have had him coming down with a bag of popcorn, right? Just small thing. But Kevin Owens comes out. He doesn't do anything initially. After he distracts Seth and they lose, he ends up hitting Seth with another stunner. The crowd loved that, too, and then dumped his popcorn on Murphy as he walked up the ramp. So certainly loved this as far as, you know, the setup here with Rollins and KO has been good so far. After Rollins got screwed twice by Kevin Owens, I can see Seth Rollins really, really maybe opening Raw tonight and just losing his mind over it and calling out Kevin Owens and, that's my estimation, but this is going to be a match that is all but confirmed for WrestleMania, and it might already be confirmed as we speak. So, okay, moving on. Here comes the surprise of the night. The Intercontinental Championship match, Sami Zayn, Cesaro, and Shinsuke defeating Braun Strowman via pinfall to win the championship. And who won it? The Great Liberator, Sami Zayn. Boy, did I love this. I love the story behind this. This was a story that I didn't know I wanted. With Sami Zayn pointing out directly before his match in Gorilla about how, you know, Braun Strowman has never been able to get his hands on Sami Zayn. Not one time, not one hair on his head, and that's true. And Sami Zayn has the biggest mouth, but he also has the biggest yellow stripe down his back. It's a great combination. I also miss seeing Sami Zayn in the ring for all of his talents on the mic. He's also very good in the ring. And playing this chicken blank heel is also, I think, good. While some of you may think he needs to be booked stronger and he's been defined down as how easily somebody could defeat him based on how he's been talking and running away. And, you know, I'm fine with it because he is, number one, he's Intercontinental Champion. Right, he's the second biggest championship in WWE. Yes, it's bigger than the United States Championship. Okay, some could argue it's as big as the Universal Championship, which was just a championship created out of thin air due to a brand split. Don't forget that, right? So to me, it's WWE Championship, Intercontinental Championship, Universal Championship, right? I know the Universal Championship is positioned higher, I understand that, but in my mind of lineage, And just overall value of belts. IC belt. As much as I don't like the IC belt look and what they've done to it, I like the old look. He's the Intercontinental Champion. And having Sami Zayn pin Braun Strowman and Braun not getting a single offensive maneuver on Sami Zayn was brilliant. And he still hasn't. That's something that's not done enough in WWE. This is somewhat done with Dolph and with Otis. Of Otis not really, although he got some offense in on Dolph, it wasn't what you wanted to see. It wasn't the payoff of seeing him get destroyed. In this case, it's even more to the extreme of Otis not even being able to get a single offensive, or Braun Strowman not getting a single offensive maneuver on Sami Zayn. It's been awesome, and I love this story that they're building to. Braun was Intercontinental Championship champion for, what, a month? So we have Sammy win it. He's going to come out. He's going to gloat on Friday. Braun will try to get to him again. I don't think he's going to get his hands on Sami Zayn until WrestleMania. And he's probably going to get a one-on-one match inside a steel cage where if anyone interferes, they're fired. He's going to have to bring this to management in some capacity, even though there's no authority figure on air on a weekly basis. You could certainly have somebody come out, especially for WrestleMania season, and make this match happen. If, you know, Braun runs a gauntlet or wins against Sammy and Cesaro in a handicap match, then he gets to pick the stipulation or earns another shot. They'll get there somehow. And I'm all for this. Braun Strowman is finally doing something relevant in his WrestleMania career. Instead of messing around with fools from Saturday Night Live, which is just downright embarrassing, or trying to be cute with some 7-year-old as tag team champions, which was downright disrespectful to the championship belts. So he's finally doing something relevant with a guy that is so underutilized. I tweeted this out too. Sami Zayn could easily be the top heel of any brand. NXT, Raw, SmackDown, doesn't matter. I love how obnoxious and how good he is at his job. And I wouldn't, you know, I'm not, let's cheer him because he's so good. I want to see him get his ass kicked. I want to see Braun get his hands on Sami Zayn. And I love how they pointed out and stressed that he has never been able to do it. That's how you hook people. And that is very rarely done in today's WWE environment. So that was the show, guys. And, you know, overall, I give the show like a C+. I think it did what it needed to do. I don't think it lived to its full potential. Certainly the lack of star power didn't help. I mean, yes, he had Undertaker appear for, you know, a minute and a half. We get that. But, you know, this is a show that was just kind of there. WWE was going to do it. Super Showdown kind of took all the thunder away from this show. And now we are full steam ahead to WrestleMania. They didn't want to risk injuries happening. Nothing cute with the outcomes. Let's just get to WrestleMania. And now that's all they have to focus on. There are no more detours. No more distractions. It is WrestleMania 36. Full steam ahead. So I'm looking forward to it as we are, 26 days away from WrestleMania in Tampa. I can't wait to see this show. I'm really looking forward to it as well. And obviously, you can stay here and subscribe to this feed for all of the latest analysis, predictions, news, everything. As we have a cast of great members here for co-hosts and contributors and writers and co-hosts and podcasts and all that kind of stuff. Between Aiden Willis, and we have Anthony, and we have Mary Grader, and we have Ashley. I mean, you know, a cast of rotating characters as well. We have, I know, Zach Smith, who has been a co-host on this show as well, who is one of our patrons on the Patreon feed. If, by the way, if you want an ad-free experience, go there. And, you know, many others. Michael Gross, who I love having on the show as well. All of you guys have been very, very... just critical in the success of this show, but they will all be here during WrestleMania season, and we're going to have a mega show for the review, for the preview. It's not going to be business as usual. We are going to do the maximum amount of coverage and analysis. We're going to give you more audio than you can handle. You're going to say, "I'm done. Oh my God." Or, "This podcast is too long." I want you to complain like that. I want those complaints, right? I'm asking you to complain that there's too much audio. I want that. That's what we're going to give you come this WrestleMania season, because we have, again, the preview and prediction show is going to be huge. It's not just going to be one co-host. I'll bring in a couple. And of course, the review show of WrestleMania 36, it's going to be massive, 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 probably at least 2 hours long. We'll have I hate to say round table, right? Because that's another podcast's shtick, and I don't want to grab that phrase, but for lack of a better term, that's what it'll be. We'll have several co-hosts on the show running through all the matches, which God Almighty knows that it's going to be a damn marathon of a day. So stay right here. If you're a new listener, you're in for a treat, because we have so many different voices and opinions on this show. And don't forget, too, our NXT reviewer as well. Chris, and then a Jeff Johnson, who is our newest contributor and reviewer for AEW every single week, all the pay-per-views and news and things like that. So a great cast of hosts, co-hosts, and contributors, again, who make this show possible. So, guys, that is my Elimination Chamber review. Tomorrow will be my Raw review. Wednesday will be a Wrestling Nostalgia from the Vault. I'll be pulling one that you may or may not have heard. And then, of course, Thursday's AEW NXT. And then on Sunday will be your weekend review as we creep closer to WrestleMania. And that is going to happen quicker than you think. It happens every single year a lot. All of a sudden, it's like 57 days, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's, you know, in 1 week, WrestleMania, like it's just the way it goes. That's how life goes, right? So, guys, thank you so much. A lot of audio content to come in this week and the coming weeks, especially as WrestleMania creeps closer and beyond. I mean, stick with us after WrestleMania season. I know that a lot of wrestling fans go away after WrestleMania, but to us, the fans that stick around, it's really a new beginning. As NXT stars get called up, it's really a reset button on both rosters. It's a great time to get started as a wrestling fan, or continue or pick back up where you may have left off after WrestleMania. I mean, WrestleMania is not the end-all be-all. It's the end of one season and the beginning of another. That's what it is. So, alrighty. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining me. And tomorrow I'll be back with the Raw review. Very interested to see what happens with Edge, what happens with the follow-up with Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens. And then, of course, we have Stone Cold Steve Austin coming on next week on 316 Day. So, boy, oh boy, is there a lot happening. And you guys know what to do. Stay right here, and I'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show. Or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to Patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.